don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to another Cryptoconomy Quick Read. I'm going to do something a little bit different with this episode, and I swear, like, I will get to the Ethereum stuff because there's a whole lot going on there. I'm actually having a bit of a hard time trying to find an article that sums it all up, so I've been arguing with myself about should I just do two articles back-to-back in one episode to cover everything, because there's Casper is basically available for public, I think, now, and there's a bunch of governance issues. They're talking about the inflation tail, everything. So there's a bunch of big stuff going on. In fact, if you have any suggestions or you see a Medium post or something that hits that topic incredibly thoroughly, ooh, I would love it. Please send it to me. But today we're not going to hit that yet. I'm going to flesh that out a little bit before I find the best option. Today, since we, Nick Szabo's blog post yesterday, very long but incredibly just full of information, is specifically talking about the trade-off that Bitcoin makes to the huge cost and loss of computational efficiency, specifically to create a system of censorship resistance and independence. A decentralized system with no third parties and no trusted gatekeepers. That is obviously very relevant to the Bitcoin and Bcash debate. And I don't mean any insult or anything with Bcash. In audio, it just saying Bitcoin and then Bitcoin Cash in the same sentences over and over again is A, too many syllables, and B, confusing. So I'm going to call it Bcash. I'm sorry. Extended olive branch. I'm not trying to call you an idiot. With that, this is a Twitter thread by Giacomo Zucco, who does in fact call Bcashers stupid. And so he's absolutely unapologetic, but he's got some really great points. And I think even if you're a big blocker or you're a Bcash supporter, please take a deep breath. I know it's going to trigger you, and you probably are already antsed up because of what I've said, and I don't mean any offense. I don't care what project succeeds. I am totally on board with the intent, well, the spoken intent of the Bcash project, and I just think they've made terrible engineering decisions toward that goal. But Giacomo Zucco comes in. This is a thread that started with Vin Armani, and it was all about Craig Wright's getting patents on a ton of different blockchain and quote-unquote Bitcoin-related technology. And Giacomo basically insults a couple of people and says, that, oh, you're pro-government kind of thing. There's a little bit of back and forth. Then Chris Passia comes in and says, very disappointing to see this behavior from you. The vast majority of us working on BCH are indeed old-school anarchists. We all vehemently oppose patents, and we're putting in the hard work necessary to make sure BCH stays decentralized, and your response is basically to accuse all of us of lying and not actually believing what we've said that we've believed in for years now. And Giacomo responded, no, that's not unfair. I don't accuse all of you of being liars, only the leaders. Many of you are just stupid. Now, I've said he is unapologetic, but he's got some excellent points that I think really hit home this argument, and he does call people or ideas stupid numerous times. Just listen to his argument. He is not somebody to be dismissed, and you should not question his motives. He's not bought by the banks. Giacomo is one of the most committed people, but he's also very opinionated. So let's go ahead and dig into his thread, and it starts with Chris Passia responding, I'd be happy to have a discussion about what specifically you think makes me stupid. And the thread follows from there. Okay, here I am. I'll write down some bullet points. This isn't a rebuttal of your article. No time for that, at least not now. It's just my own list of arguments about what specifically I think makes you and every other bee catcher who isn't intentionally malicious stupid. 1. Bitcoin is one of the greatest financial opportunities in human history. If anyone is interested in wealth and misses it or f***s up with it, qualifies as stupid. I get from your other tweets that you're not interested in wealth. I am. So at least this point doesn't really concern you. 2. Bitcoin is one of the greatest opportunities for the advancement of personal freedom in human history. I think whoever qualifies as a, quote, libertarian in the Anglo-Saxon free market tradition, I guess this is the case for you, and misses it, f***s up with it, qualifies as stupid. 3. When I say misses it or f***s up with it, as I did in 1 and 2, I mean in a crescendo of stupidity, privately dismissing it, publicly dismissing it, advising others to do the same, publicly and actively attacking it, going down in history as an enemy of Bitcoin, the zenith of stupidity. 4. Bitcoin is a complex topic. I don't think who don't understand it fully qualifies as stupid just for that, but who, without understanding it, voices very strong controversial opinions about it, taking extreme stances under the effect of his own cognitive dissonance, does qualify. 5. Since Bitcoin is complex, reference number 4, I don't think everybody should or could come to understand it deeply, subtle trade-offs included, but I think everybody who isn't stupid can easily use basic heuristics to distinguish and compare other people's expertise, skills, integrity, and honesty. Thus, even without discussing his ability to master this complex topic directly, whoever systematically, continuously, and exclusively conflates experts with solid arguments, with obvious blatant scammers, fraudsters, con men, manipulators, and compromised or bad, fully qualifies as stupid. 6. Slight change of topic. It will make sense later on. I think I understand Bitcoin enough to say it's very likely an unrepeatable experiment. Altcoins, even if they weren't the scammy, clumsy, useless, inferior Bitcoin clones they all are inherently stupid because, first, their success would undermine the only thing that makes the digital gold scarcity value proposition possible, a focal point around the original issuance. Second, they can't replicate Bitcoin's immaculate conception, quote-unquote. They're compromised since day zero by definition. So I think that while the Bitcoin experiment could very well still fail, even if I think and hope with all my heart that it will succeed, altcoins couldn't possibly win. I think it's very stupid to bet on the altcoin takeover, or even worse, on the multi-coin coexistence scenarios. 7. Another slight change of topic. It's obvious to me that there is a fundamental problem with a global state network designed in such a way that it will forever require every single node to get and process every single past and present state change. I think only a stupid person would disagree. Luckily, I don't think Bitcoin as a whole is doomed to be such a system, even if we could say it has been for a while. There are several techniques, some already imagined by Satoshi and even by his predecessors, that could at least mitigate this obvious inherent problem. These are each bullet points, so we'll just go one by one. So first, trusted third parties for little or fast transactions where counterparty risk is minimized away and then on-chain settlement, proposed by Finney. Trustless in-sequence-based payment channels and on-chain settlement, proposed by Satoshi. Few big masternodes enabling trustless SPV via fraud proofs, proposed by Satoshi. Trustless sharding, nodes get or verify only some relevant information, ignoring other parts of the global state, proposed by Todd, Maxwell, and others. Trustless pruning, nodes get or verify only recent information, discarding all the old information eventually. Another one by Todd Maxwell and others. But unfortunately, not all these theoretical techniques turn out to work in practice. First, trusted third parties turned out to be a systemic risk. In-sequence channels idea was broken, and we had to wait years for it to be fixed, SegWit and Lightning channels, and then improved, Lightning trustless onion routing. Satoshi's fraud proofs turned out to be unfeasible, making SPV basically trust-based, and the few big masternodes model easy to censor or attack. Trustless sharding, aka sidechains, while being sold as a buzzword by Ethereum scammers, is still a difficult, unproved topic. Trustless pruning turned out to be unfeasible as well, leaving sinking nodes with the need to get and verify all the past information and to discard it only after sync to save space. It takes a stupid person to think that difficult problems are magically solved just by some smart idea. 8. I think I know Bitcoin enough to say that as long as the aforementioned fundamental problem, number 7, still exists, thus excluding future advancement and current off-chain second layers finally in production, there's a difficult trade-off between easy validation and easy transactions. A hypothetical blockchain with 200 kilobyte blocks every 4 hours would be cheap and fast to validate. We'd run full nodes on our mobiles, orphan rate would be low, and mining would be decentralized. But only a few use cases, big, slow settlements, would fit on-chain, forcing everything else off-chain. A hypothetical blockchain with 10 gigabyte blocks every 2 seconds would be trivially cheap and fast to use directly for every use case, including the most stupid ones. But it would be too expensive and slow to validate for anybody, centralizing Bitcoin completely. There's a spectrum in between. 9. While I can accept different opinions about this, without necessarily considering stupid who would make the opposite point, I think there's solid arguments hinting at the fact that Bitcoin as is could be too much shifted into the easy to transact extreme of that spectrum. Number 8. Just empirically, a lot of people are transacting on-chain, even for very stupid use cases where you don't need censorship resistance at all, while very few people run validating nodes, most relying on centralized third parties that could be easily compromised, corrupted, or censored. 10. While maybe debatable, the above argument for Bitcoin being as is, actually too much transaction friendly as opposed to validation friendly, should be already pretty concerning in the current context that we should or could consider a best case scenario, like internet infrastructure is not likely to be partitioned in the next months because of global wars, hopefully. Bitcoin mining isn't yet illegal in China, and Bitcoin users can sync even without using Tor because Bitcoin is not yet fought so hard by governments, etc. But Bitcoin should be able to survive and remain censorship resistant in the worst case scenario. The same could be said about orphan rate and mining centralization, arguably too high since years in an overall good case scenario. What could it become in the worst case one? 11. Even if my assessment about the position of Bitcoin as is in that trade-off, number 9, was wrong, I really think it isn't, I guess it takes a special kind of stupid to ignore the fact that the different failure modes at the two extremes are actually not symmetrical at all. While in the, quote, crippled extreme, there will always be use cases that will pay or wait enough to be mined. But by definition, there are no ways to survive government censorship in the, quote, centralized extreme. Given Bitcoin's goals, it's very stupid not to be conservative about this. 12. Regardless of the kind of update or change that we're talking about, even if it was super safe from a validation cost mining centralization point of view, every possible change of rules, good or bad, is in itself an attack surface that could be used to corrupt or attack the project. This would be true also for changes that I personally approve, like SegWit. I elaborated further about this in this very topic in my old Split article, but it seems to have been taken down by Crypto Insider. I don't know why. Ping Crypto Insider. 13. Arguments against contentious on-chain scale increases, numbers 9, 10, 11, and 12, are reinforced by the fact that while for things as fungibility and decentralization, it's a race against time, for throughput increases, there is all the time in the world. There's no rush by definition. Many said that we should rush to avoid that altcoins will take over, but this is just logical nonsense. Either my argument about altcoins, referencing number 6, is true or it's false. If it's true, then altcoins cannot take over because they can't possibly deliver what Bitcoin can deliver. If it's false, well then fine. What's the problem in getting financial freedom with one or more altcoins, especially if we're here for the ideological goal, referencing number 2, and not for the financial one, referencing number 1? But even in that case, we can just dump some Bitcoin to buy the winner alts. Win-win. If that argument is false, there's no need to change Bitcoin in a contentious or dangerous way. We can just wait for the, quote, better altcoins. Lol. On the other hand, if that argument is true and we do compromise Bitcoin's security, even just a little, we screwed up our only chance. 14. Even if I was wrong about the current state of Bitcoin in number 9, the simple fact that there isn't or cannot be any rush, reference number 13, makes obvious the choice to prioritize study, development, and adoption of long-term sustainable solutions off-chain instead of kicking the can down the road. 15. Now I'd like to get back to a more general topic. I honestly think it's a clear sign of stupidity to fall for the old, typical, standard, obvious trick of populist conspiracy theories. These theories are all very similar, and they all basically go like this. Quote, the world would be perfect. Everything would come for free, without any scarcity, any sacrifice, or any trade-offs, if not for an evil minority who creates artificial scarcity and trade-offs, all to get some power over us with extremely complex and not well-defined machinations. End quote. I think only stupid people fall for this kind of cheap rhetoric. But don't get me wrong, that's a lot of people. Most persons are more stupid than the average person, and the average person is indeed very stupid. That's why populist myths are widely used by politicians. 16. While populist conspiracy theories are stupid in and of themselves, number 15, the particular one used in the Bitcoin scalability circus is an astonishingly idiotic variation around the basic plot. I really think only very stupid people could fall for something like this. Reference number 5. In this case, the explanation of the conspiracy is more cumbersome than usual. To begin with, basically all the cypherpunks that pioneered the discovery of Bitcoin, Adam Back, Nick Szabo, Peter Todd, Hal Finney, inexplicably do agree on the existence of the, quote, artificial trade-off in scarcity. Weird. Then some of those pioneers are even recruited by the usual conspiracy villains, Bilderberg, Rothschild, whatever, to create a company, Blockstream, committed to destroy Bitcoin through conservation and promotion of the, quote, artificial, fake limitations and trade-offs. Wow, much evil. There isn't a very clear explanation of the exact motivation behind the Bilderberg, Rothschild, whatever evil plan. Probably they're just afraid of Bitcoin since they, quote, control all the banks. Duh. Don't tell anybody, but I think they may even be Jews. Spooky. Since dumb conspiracy theories don't have to be consistent, this goal is confused with another one, also very typical. Profit! So evil! Apparently Blockstream, quote, will make money with commercial sidechains because people will use the Lightning Network due to small blocks, end quote. Okay, Lightning isn't really a commercial sidechain, but an open, permissionless layer on top of Bitcoin, characterized by negligible to inexistent fees, developed by many independent companies and developers, and run by thousands of independent competing parties. But who cares, right? 17. On logical ground only, we can already say this particular flavor of populist conspiracy theory, referencing number 16, is so stupid that only very stupid people would fall for it. but it's also based on many factual lies, all actually very easy to debunk, i.e., the number of Bitcoin Core developers employed by Blockstream, the number of Bitcoin Core developers not employed by Blockstream, Lightning Network developers employed by Blockstream, and the number of Lightning Network developers not employed by Blockstream, and so on. There are also a lot of economical, political misconceptions about, quote, censorship, for example, typically used to promote this idiotic conspiracy theory. I tried to list some of them in my talk. Only very stupid people would believe this stuff. 18. Simple heuristics aren't just useful to be skeptical about nonsensical conspiracy theories, but also and especially to beware clear, obvious, blatant fraudsters and liars. So the big block field is now mostly led, sponsored, and pushed by Craig S. Wright, Jihan Wu, and Roger Ver. The first is a confirmed con artist who tried to impersonate Satoshi Nakamoto with false, delirious claims, fake digital signatures, fake predated blog posts, and PGP keys. Every single con attempt was publicly debunked. Purpose? Visibility, but also patent trolling versus Bitcoin. The second is an ASIC monopolist. I actually hope not for long. Connected with the Chinese government, who's playing since years an obvious monopoly troll game against Bitcoin, completed with kill switches, backdoors, and covert optimizations built on stuff sold to other people. The third is a pathological narcissistic liar who was caught lying about not using sock puppets and who spent the last month spreading fake news and FUD versus Bitcoin and using his online channels to defraud newbies, selling them Bcash while they were looking for Bitcoin. There's actually other embarrassing minor characters in that pathetic circus, one more ethically questionable than the next, from the, quote, bamboozled, disgraced former developer Gavin Andreessen, who supported the Craig Wright fraud, to academic plagiarism hero Eamon Gunserer, etc. Only someone extremely stupid would think this kind of brigade could really replace Bitcoin as the new, private, censorship-resistant, global, sustainable digital gold standard. To think that Bitcoin could be replaced by an altcoin, for whatever reason, is generally stupid. Even if Bitcoin was really doomed by some convoluted conspiracy, reference number 16, any attempt to replace it would fail, reference number 6. But even if one really went down this road, literally any other altcoin, maybe Big Fast Blocks Litecoin, would have more chances than the embarrassing scam Bcash. 19. For all these reasons, I think you're either stupid or malicious. I hope you don't take this as a personal offense. I don't think stupidity is genetic. I think it's mostly a choice, some kind of intellectual dishonesty or laziness. People can stop being stupid. You should. So that will close the thread. If I told you he was unapologetic and opinionated, now you know. That is absolutely the truth. But he had some really great points in there. And he's clearly has a very low opinion of absolutely respectfully Craig S. Wright is a complete fraudster. He's absolutely a scammer. Every single attempt to impersonate Satoshi Nakamoto was absolutely trashed by anybody who can assess this information by themselves. Craig Wright is a fraud. Anybody who props him up or thinks that he is a good promoter of Bcash and he is a good person to have around that project, that's the stupidest decision in the world, in my mind. That is absolutely the dumbest thing that they could do. So that is literally my number one thing, is that if you cannot assess whether or not Craig Wright was a fraud or lying about all of his claims, then how could I possibly think that you understood the nuances between Bitcoin and Bcash and the big block and scalability arguments? I mean, Vin Armani had an episode about it or talked about it in his episode, Do You Think He's Satoshi? And he acted like it was this, we don't really know, you know, and I'll just give Satoshi his privacy. So, he really, really tiptoed around the issue as if it was just this confusing thing that we don't know. And that's not true. every way that he publicly tried to prove that he was Satoshi was a lie, was a deliberate, like, fraud. Like, it was, he took information that was supposed to be and made it look like it was Satoshi's, his key, the backdated blog post, everything. And it was all fraudulent. So it's not like, if somebody was actually Satoshi, if I was actually trying to prove I was Satoshi, why would I go through the headache of trying to create a fake PGP key and backdate it and do all this stuff to make it look like I'm Satoshi rather than, why wouldn't I just say I can't publicly prove it? Why try to prove it with a lie? So that's the absolute first thing that just makes me want to run away from the project, is that for all the people who support or give him a pass, of all people, if they can't read the articles that thoroughly break down the PGP and all the proof of Satoshi nonsense, and assess who is telling the truth in those scenarios, then how could I possibly trust them in a nuanced trade-off discussion regarding Bitcoin, particularly when their claim is that the trade-off doesn't exist? That is ridiculous. And I'm not even joking, and I'm not even exaggerating. Roger, many of these people have said this on multiple occasions, that there is no trade-off. It's completely artificial. And considering the fact that the very design, all Bitcoin invented, was the trade-off. That's literally what it was. That's its whole design. Without the trade-off for massive computational redundancy and inefficiency in order to gain security and decentralization, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Not only is it clearly there, it is the design. That's what Bitcoin invented, is the trade-off for computational efficiency for the security and censorship resistance. So the next thing I want to hit is the altcoin arguments. That was part six, which he says, first, their success of any altcoins completely ruins the digital gold value proposition. And that's true. Sound money is all about the fact that we can achieve digital scarcity. So I think of it very similarly to having social networks, is, yeah, we might have a couple of social networks, but there's no value in creating a new Facebook every time we want to get a new group of people together, because the value in it is the fact that we're all using Facebook. So if we're using a decentralized means of communicating and social network, it only makes sense that we have one social network so that the network encompasses all the people. And I don't mean that in the sense that it's good to have a big, giant, centralized Facebook. I think that's bad. But if you're not connected to the network, there's no value in the network. And then also that they can't replicate Bitcoin's immaculate conception, as he referred to it. By definition, at day zero, they're compromised. And that's absolutely true in my opinion, too. Every one of these has very explicit and, they have websites with this is our team kind of thing. And I think altcoins will still, there's definitely an argument that altcoins might be, Starbucks points or, whatever, all these other different options. We have tokens all over the world, security, stocks, futures contracts, all this stuff. I think it can be, in a sense, tokenized. And maybe they will be altcoins. Maybe they'll be sidechain coins or smart contracts on another system like Bitcoin or Ethereum. But regardless, is the underlying decentralization, the reserve, the gold of the system, is going to be the one that's most independent and most censorship resistant, because it's the only one that can truly prove the property right of money. But then his second point with that is, even though he thinks Bitcoin will succeed, or at least he hopes with all of his heart that it will succeed, if it is true that altcoins could possibly win, who cares? Who cares? That's awesome. That would be the greatest thing ever. If altcoins succeeded because Bitcoin had something wrong, then great, invest in that altcoin if you think it will succeed where Bitcoin has failed. But thinking that's a good excuse to break or make a massive trade-off with the one with Bitcoin, the one that's absolutely focused on security and censorship resistant above anything and everything else. Like, no, we have thousands of altcoins that we can try the big blocker test with. We have so many altcoins that are promoting millions of transactions per second. We don't need that. We have that 1,000 different ways. Bitcoin is the only one right now that I have seen from everything that I've studied. Bitcoin is the only one that holds the decentralization and security as absolutely unequivocally paramount, literally rocket ship levels above any other change or desire in the system and network. And I think that is why my investment is there. Because that's what I want to see in sound money, is that the monetary policy and the inability to fall victim to centralized or political discussion is absolutely unequivocally paramount. It is the most important feature of this entire system, is the need, the lack of the need to trust some dude somewhere. So if altcoins can pull that off better, go to town. But there's no reason to break Bitcoin apart because you think they're doing it wrong. We've got thousands of options. Just invest in the altcoin. His arguments that the ability to just kind of drum up a political debate and then split Bitcoin, I think that was number 12. Even if it's a split that we approve of, like let's say SegWit came in as a hard fork, like, again, I feel that same way. That immediately becomes an attack vector because it's like, oh, well, as long as we can get a big, loud group of people behind it, well, we'll just split it. So I think that's ill-advised from the get-go, and I think that was the entire discussion. There were so many people claiming that, oh, well, we tried to compromise down from 8 megabytes to 2 megabytes, and then we were going to add SegWit, and they didn't compromise at all. Well, no, the whole argument was about soft forks versus hard forks. Do we get it by breaking consensus when it's contentious, or do we let the system sustain itself and only move with the lowest common denominator for what we can all agree on? And that is a fundamental part of this entire game. So I agree with him on that point as well. And his whole thread, number 15 and 16, about how ridiculous the populist conspiracy theory is, I totally agree with that one. I think the fact that the biggest conversation piece, like what is endless, and I guess it's just because Roger Ver can't talk about anything else, and he's the one that's basically pioneering this whole debate, is that the banks have taken over and they invented Lightning. It's so silly. It's contradictory in three or four different ways. And Giacomo did a great job of breaking it down. It's just silly. And I go into thorough detail with number 10 or 11 in my post about Lightning FUD. That's don't count your FUD before lightning strikes, as to why I think it's absolutely absurd to think that the banks have hindered Bitcoin so that they can invent Lightning and then control the whole network. If you want to hear that, please go back and listen to the episode. I think it was like episode 49 or 50 or something right around there. But it's don't count your FUD before lightning strikes, because it's just ridiculous. Hopefully I didn't make anybody too angry with this post. I'm sure there are some big blockers out there or some noobs who have yet to come down on either side or think they've found a side and, you know, just haven't done a ton of reading or digging into it. Often I think that a lot of people just will pick one side and then just slowly become more heavily invested in basically broadcasting that opinion to people, and then they just kind of become stubborn and they never actually dig into it either way. They never truly assess, okay, well, let's say the other is right and then try to prove that argument. All right, well, now let's say it's wrong and try to prove that argument and then assess them both, which, I mean, I know I am obviously guilty of that exact same thing probably a million times in my life, but particularly around Bitcoin, I want to really know what's going on. I don't like being in the dark, because this is math. This is theory and this is logic. Like, you can get to the truth of this. And I'm not afraid of hearing an insulting argument if I think they've got really good points. So, and I've probably read, I mean, I was actually a big blocker at the beginning of this. I was kind of excited about Bitcoin Unlimited right at the beginning. And I mean, it's the most obvious position to hold. Like, there's nothing simpler than, oh, well, let's just make the blocks bigger and we'll have more transactions. And what sucks is that that's kind of where they ended the argument. They didn't even go any deeper. They just immediately leave from that presumption, which I think is wrong, and move directly into conspiracy theory. And that's not everybody. That's not the entire big blocker camp, but it's a shocking number of the Bcash supporters, unfortunately. So hopefully, if you had not come down one way or the other, that gave you some insight into the whole debate. And if you are a big blocker, I am sorry if this got you triggered, or if, you know, maybe you didn't even care. But regardless, this is how I feel about it. I think Giacomo's thread was excellent and detailed out some really good points that I think would be very foolish if there are some Bcash supporters out there to not thoroughly take into account what he is saying. But again, that was Giacomo Zucco's epic Twitter thread, basically detailing out all the leaders as frauds and the supporters of Bcash stupids. But with that, we will close this crypto economy podcast episode. If you are enraged by his thread and or any of my comments, please, I love to debate this stuff. And so find me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy or Medium at The Crypto Economy and drop all your rage onto my Twitter feed. I would love to hear it all. And also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and or leave some feedback. But until next time, guys, this has been a Crypto Economy Quick Read. Take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.